Welcome to The Human Condition with Lisa Gregory. Suicide is one of the 10 leading causes of death in the United States, with suicides increasing 33% from 1999 through 2017, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But what of those left behind? Those who are left to grapple with the whys and oftentimes guilt of a loved one's choice to end their life. In the depths of her own pain, after losing someone dear to her to suicide, Barbara Cattaneo reached out to others, creating the SSS, Suicide, Loss, Survivors, and Overdose Support Group. By doing so, Barbara wanted to provide a place where suicide loss survivors could come together and be there for one another. A place where they could share their pain, which can be uniquely theirs and not always understood by society as a whole.
How did this support group come to be?
Back in 2016, I lost my life partner and best friend, Chris Farley, to suicide. And I was in the search for a support group that helped people who were the survivors of those types of situations. And I really couldn't find anything in the area. I was looking for something to help me. And it ended up being a resource for people a lot more than I thought it was going to be. And we've helped a lot of people in the last 2.5 years. I've seen amazing differences in survivors that have come in after they've lost somebody, and then a year later or 2 years later, they're a completely different person than the day that they walked into the meeting. So it's been very, very, very positive.
You know, we're sort of in a suicide epidemic in this country, and actually the world over. And it's one of the 10 leading causes of death in the United States. You know, you have people like Robin Williams, Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, coming from the front lines as you have. What do you think is going on in today's world? Would you like to speak to that?
Well, I would absolutely love to speak to it. I don't know that I know the answers. I'm also on the Carroll County Health Department's Suicide Prevention Coalition Board, and we meet once a month to talk about this exact issue. Why is it becoming so prevalent? I didn't realize this is statistics, but in Carroll County, there's a lot of children, middle school and high schoolers that are taking their own lives. And the only thing I can attribute this to, because my partner was 50 years old when he died, so he suffered from depression and alcoholism and some other things. I don't know if it's because of social media. I don't know if it's because of bullying. I don't know if it's just some of these kids, and I've heard some of the stories from some of the parents who come to the meetings that their kids have suffered from depression all their lives. And I feel like my perspective, purely personal, is that people think it's an option, that instead of dealing with their issues or working through their issues, they just end their lives because it's just easier to do that than have to walk through whatever pain they're going through. And I know for Chris, my partner, I think he felt that whatever pain he had, he thought that the best choice for him was to end his life because he just couldn't deal with it anymore. And I can't understand the pain that he was in. I didn't see that pain. So after 3 years, I'm still puzzled as to why he made that choice, but we'll never know the answers to some of these things.
And, you know, you hear a lot about the people that do commit suicide and, you know, the prevention, that sort of thing. Do you feel like we don't really draw enough attention to the suicide loss survivors?
Sadly, when someone loses someone to suicide, the survivors, there's a tendency for the survivor, because they do get so upset and the grief and the depression after they lose someone, they end up thinking and doing the same thing. So I do think that there needs to be more attention on the survivors, because they're the ones left behind. And everybody's talking about the person who took their life, but no one's really. And the thing is, Lisa, a lot of people don't want to approach us. They get very awkward around us because they don't want to bring it up, and they don't want to, you know, say, oh, how are you doing? You know, because it's like a taboo subject. But if you don't talk about it and you don't get it out there, it's just going to fester and, you know, cause more problems. And I really do think there needs to be more attention on the survivors.
Do you think the stigma is going away a little bit? Do you think that we're embracing this, you know, especially within the last decade or so, where mental health issues, people are talking more, they're sharing more, they're, you know, sharing their feelings and their experiences. Are we making advances in that area?
I think that with pretty much everything I've seen in my life in the last 54 years, you know, obviously things are different than they were in the 50s, the 60s, and 70s. You know, you just see everything across the board is completely different. Things aren't in the closet like they used to be. And I do think that talking about suicide and talking about prevention and being more aware is definitely better than it used to be. But I still come across people who get very awkward around it and don't want to talk about it and are very old school when it comes to that, you know. And as a matter of fact, a gentleman I work with, and God bless him because I know he didn't mean it, but after Chris died, he'd sent me an email and he said, "I'm really sorry, you know, to hear about this." What a selfish thing for him to do. And that's how people used to think, that it was a selfish thing that this person was doing and, you know, leaving and then leaving everybody else behind. But that's not really, it's not about being selfish. It's about being in so much pain that they think that's the only choice they have. So I don't look at it as being selfish, but unfortunately, that's still the mindset of a lot of people.
When I attended the meeting that you all took such comfort, one young woman said she could come to the meeting and the other people would understand why she didn't smile. People out and about would be, you know, "Why are you so sad? Why aren't you smiling?" You know, why it was such a struggle for her. And yet she could come to the meetings and feel very comfortable and, you know, among her peers, among people that
Right. Fellow
understood.
survivors. Yep.
Yes. Yes. Why
Yes.
is that so important, do you think?
Well, I think that a lot of us feel we can't talk about our situations after a certain period of time because, frankly, there's people in our lives that have said outright, you know, "Aren't you over it yet?" And the thing I've learned about this grief and pretty much any is that you'd never really get over it. You just learn how to move forward. So when people come into the meeting, the Triple S meeting, they know that they're not going to be judged. Nobody's going to say, "Oh, it's been 5 years and you're still sad." I mean, no, we don't do that. It's about being there and being supportive and letting the person know that the way they feel is perfectly fine. And a lot of people share with us that they can't be honest with the people in their quote unquote real life because nobody wants to hear it anymore, or other people have moved on and they, you know, so they feel awkward talking about it in the real world. So they come to our meeting and they're able to share whatever they want.
What have you taken away from this experience? How has this impacted you as a person?
The death of Chris or the Triple S group or
Well,
both or.
kind of both, actually, but I'm thinking more of Triple S and sort of bringing people together and offering them a chance to express themselves in a place where they can be comforted. Is it, do you feel like you have benefited from this as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. I go to the meeting sometimes, you know, and I feel pretty down about things, and I may it might be about Chris or it might just be about something in my regular life, and it's nice to have a group of people that I can go and talk to and don't judge and will help me with whatever it is. If Chris hadn't died, obviously this group wouldn't have started. I'm trying to look at this as a positive out of a very negative situation. I get a tremendous amount out of it. I love meeting the people. We had a new person come on Saturday, and her son took his life about 10 months ago, and she had not had any support at all for 10 months, and just finally somebody told her about us, and she came in, and she you could see the relief in her eyes after she was there for the hour and a half. When she first sat down, she was a little apprehensive. Everybody usually is. They don't know what to expect. And then you can see just start talking and crying and sharing, and by the end we're all hugging and everybody is friends, and it's just a really amazing process that people go through, and it's strictly peer support. None of us are licensed professionals. We're not medical, mental professionals. We're just people who've been there, and we just try to offer some experience, strength, and hope to other people so that they can get through their lives without their loved one.
Let's talk about the guilt aspect, because there's a lot of that, isn't there, when you lose someone that way?
Yes, because a lot of times we ask ourselves, why didn't I see the signs? Why didn't I know this person was struggling as bad as they were? Or if they were struggling and you've done as much as you can and they still took their own life. I've met a number of people who've told me that the people who they've lost had struggled their whole lives. And some of them have told me that they had like 24/7, you know, watches on these folks, and they still ended up taking their own lives when they had a window of opportunity. And so a lot of those folks feel very guilty because they actually had a plan in place and it still didn't work. you can't, it was a choice that the individual made. This is what I've learned. And you can't feel guilty about a choice that they made. This was their decision. And they felt that it was the best thing for them because they were in so much pain. They didn't think they had any other option. It's sad. You know, I look back on my situation. I wish Chris had reached out to me when he was struggling that particular weekend. I don't feel guilty anymore. I did in the beginning. I've had friends of his who I no longer speak to who told me that it was my fault that he took his life because I didn't see the signs. But, you know, that was difficult to swallow. That took me a good year or so to get over. Because when somebody blames you for somebody else's suicide, that's a very hard thing to have to hear.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I see a therapist myself, and she's helped me, you know, come to terms with a lot of this stuff as well.
Could you tell us about his particular suicide?
Sure. Yeah. So my son and I were having some relationship problems. He was 17 at the time, or 16. And Chris had actually suggested that Brian and I take a trip and do something that Brian would want to do. And Brian likes to fish and horseback ride and kind of live in the wilderness type of thing. So I decided in April, Chris died in June, I decided in April to take him for his birthday, which would have been 16 turning 17, to Wyoming. So we were in the Medicine Bow Forest in Wyoming when Chris died, and there's no cell service there. We didn't actually get cell service for an hour and a half when we drove out of the forest, and finally all these things were popping up on my phone. My daughter remembered where I was and called me at the lodge at the place where we're staying, and that's how I found out about it. So I think that Chris had started drinking again after being in recovery for a long time, 10 years. And I think that coupled with his depression and some other things that were going on, he just got very sad that weekend. I had left. Brian had left. His daughter had just graduated from high school. She was down at senior week. His son was in New York at the Belmont horse races for the weekend. It was just this perfect storm that nobody was home. And I think he just decided after drinking and taking some over-the-counter medications that he was so depressed that he just thought, nobody's here. I'm just going to do it now. And he used a shot, not a shotgun, a handgun to the head.
Would you like to sort of describe him and let our listeners know what he was like as a person?
Sure.
Because I understand he had a wonderful laugh.
He had a wonderful laugh. So Chris and I went to grade school together. And so I knew him from first grade through eighth grade. And we kind of went our separate ways for about 30 some years. And then we reconnected about 6 or 7 years ago. And it's funny because I'd always had a crush on him in grade school. And so to actually, you know, be in a relationship with him was like a dream come true from when I was, you know, 13. So he was a big guy. He was about 6'2" and very happy on outwardly, very happy, loved kids, loved his children, loved my kids. Was definitely a family man. He was a coach at Freedom Rec in the area for years, a basketball coach. Very supportive of whatever the kids were doing with their athletics and academics and everything. He was just a really great, good person, just a really good, kind person. And he had this really deep laugh, and he was hysterical when he would laugh, and he would sing. He was a great guy. He was my best friend. He was my life partner. And even decisions today that I make, I think, you know, what would Chris think or what would he say? So I try to still consider what perspective he would have on different things in my life. So I miss him terribly. He, like I said, he was my best friend. We used to just laugh and laugh and laugh about things. And it's hard to find that. You just don't get that from everybody. And I'll never be able to replace him. And I don't want to.
You know, you worked really hard during the last few years to make a sort of peace with this, a sense of peace, haven't you? And I assume it's not easy, but I guess
no,
it would
not.
Be worth it.
Yeah, because it really sucked in the beginning, Lisa. It was really hard.
Yeah.
you know, that first year, I just cried all the time. I had to really check myself at work. Sometimes I'd have to shut the door and just shut the blinds in my office and just cry. And everybody told me it's okay to do that. You know, people in the support group, you know, it's okay to just do it. And I couldn't go to some social functions. There was times where I just said, I just can't do it. I can't be around people and pretend to be happy. I don't want, I can't do it. My first year was the worst. But then after that, I started saying, I've got to walk through this. I got to walk through this pain to come out the other end. And it's amazing when you start seeing people who've done that and how, you know, they've been able to grow and get better and not feel as sad and, you know, find some positive things in life.
So you're really seeing within the group across the spectrum, aren't you? It's really impacting all aspects of life, isn't it?
It is. There isn't a stereotype at all. I mean, we have siblings, we have parents, we have children, aunts and uncles, all different types of socioeconomic backgrounds. It's been this amazing understanding that it affects everybody. I mean, you think about the celebrities that have taken their own lives and you think, why would they do that? They have everything, but you don't know. You don't know what's going on in that person's head and how they feel. And what they, you know, what that pain is that they're experiencing. But yeah, it definitely affects everybody.
Now, you also implement overdose, which is another epidemic that's sort of taking over our society. Why not just focus on the suicide? Why did you also want to include the overdose aspect?
Well, originally when I set the group up, I had a neighbor whose son had overdosed about 15 or 18 years ago. And she was saying to me, and this was before I actually officially set the group up, but I was starting to think about it. You know, I wish they had a support group for me when my son died, you know, 15 or 18 years ago. And I started thinking about suicide and overdose. And a lot of the people that come to the meeting tell me that they're not sure if the overdose was intentional or not. They just don't know the loved one that they lost. They don't know if they did it on purpose or whether it was accident. Now, there's some that we know was definitely an accident, and people will, you know, vehemently say, no, they didn't take their own life. But it's so similar for the survivor in the sense that you're losing someone without any, you know, notice. It's not like they're dying of a disease and you had time to prepare. I mean, this is one of those things where all of a sudden they're gone. And it is a personal choice. You're making a choice to take your life. You're making a choice to use drugs. It's a choice that you make. I'm not saying like everybody who overdoses is doing that to kill themselves, but it's not like somebody's doing it to you. So it's very similar in some ways, and the survivors of both are dealing with the same issues, the questions and wanting to know why and, you know, how did this happen and how come I didn't see the signs? It's all very similar, very, very similar. And so I thought for my neighbor at the time, I wanted to try to put the group together to help her and other people like her. And then also just because I saw so many similarities with the suicide epidemic and the heroin epidemic and, you know, all of that, that I thought, well, we'll just put it into one group. And I'm glad that I have, because it's crossed over so many times. I've never thought that I would see it as much as I do.
Wow. Could you talk about some of the people that you've seen come through to the other side and are functioning? And I can think of one young woman in particular that we both know that I am just amazed at her transformation.
Isn't it? I know. She and I had dinner the other night and I said to her, you know, the person that you were the first time I met you in March of 2016 to the person that you are now is absolutely astounding. I mean, she didn't even speak at the first meeting. Her sister-in-law brought her to the first meeting. She had her head down. She wouldn't look at anybody. She didn't talk. She cried and just sat there and cried. Tears were coming down her face. And she was 3 years into her situation, and she was so stuck in her depression and her grief that she couldn't move forward. And you know, I'm not a licensed professional or anything, but I thought, I got to help this girl. She's got her whole life ahead of her. She's had two young children. I got to do something. And I said to her, this is what you're going to do. You're going to do what I tell you to do. And I said, you're going to get back into the throes of society. You're going to start functioning like a human being. You're going to get up and have a purpose every day. And I just pushed her and pushed her and pushed her. I called her every day. I went to her house almost every night. And little by little, she started to really come out of the shell and started to grow and started to see, you know, life can exist beyond the fact that I've lost this loved one. And she is amazing now. I mean, she's working and she's involved in a relationship with a gentleman, and she's happy, and she looks beautiful. I mean, it's just like the literally the person I met 3 years ago and who she is today. I mean, it's completely opposite. We've also had another gal who lost her daughter a couple years ago. And the very first couple of meetings that she came to, I, you know, sometimes I will talk to the other co-chair people and say privately, I don't know if we can help this person. I mean, I really feel like they need medical or psychological attention. I, you know, I don't think we can help them. And I thought the same about this person, and she struggled a lot and losing her daughter. But then I've now it's been two years or so, and I just saw that she got engaged and she's moving on with her life in the sense that she's trying to still be happy and find some fulfillment in life. So yeah, I think that people have made amazing transitions from the first time they come in to where they end up.
Well, you know, one member you have that I met, she had lost her sister, I think, 20 years ago. And she said that she came to the meetings to help others. She'd made her peace and she wanted to reach out to others.
So that's exactly it. And that's one of the things I try to tell some of the older folks who the survivors who've been, you know, dealing with their situations for more than 2 years or so, try to come to the meetings just to help the newcomer, because the newcomer needs that help and they need that support. And we do, we have people that will continue to come just to help everybody else. It's about a fellowship. It's about helping other human beings who are going down the same path that you've gone down.
Can you imagine your life not if you hadn't decided to start this group? Because it helped you heal as well.
I don't know if I could imagine my life without the group. This group, the friends that I have made, the people that I have met are lifelong people. I mean, there's just no question about it. When this is a true story, the 1 year anniversary of Chris's death, the people that showed up at the prayer service, because I did a prayer service at the cemetery that day, were all the people that I had met in my Triple S group from, you know, the previous 6 months or so. They're the ones, my brother and some other people that were close friends, but the people that actually were there were the people that understood what I was going through and actually showed up for me. And I love those people.
What would you like to tell someone that may be listening that's just lost someone through suicide? What would you like to speak to them?
I would like to tell them that they're not alone. There's a lot of us out there, sadly. We're here for them. Anytime they need to talk, they can reach out to me or some of the other folks in the group. You know, find us on the Facebook page, come to a meeting, tell us how you're feeling, what's going on. Nothing that you're feeling is unusual. It's all very normal. You can talk to us. We'll listen, and we're not going to judge. I suggest that to any newcomer that they read as much as they can about suicide and grief, because it's been very educational for me. Education is so important in this process, because for me, that's how I kind of put some of the pieces together. Obviously, I'll never know the real story, but I tried to educate myself as much as I could on the whole suicide epidemic and what a person may be thinking or why they make that choice, to kind of help me understand what happened.
Do you see yourself continuing to reach out and help others? And actually, I didn't know that you're serving on a board, you said?
Yes. So the Carroll County Health Department contacted me a couple months ago and said that they were starting a new coalition for suicide prevention, of ways to develop programs in the county to help people who, you know, have suicide ideas and, you know, obviously prevent them from making that decision. And so I said I would be happy to be on the board. So we meet once a month, and then there's a subcommittee that's also been formed that I'm on to try to put some things into place. So, you know, it's in Maryland, the state of Maryland's doing the same thing. The state of Maryland's got a coalition. They're really focusing on this. So I see it happening in our state and our local community. I think from a national perspective, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention Prevention is very active. So, you know, we're doing a lot to try to get the education out there and the awareness. And I will continue to do this.
Well, in wrapping up, I guess the message is there is hope. There's hope, and there is the other side to that experience and having a fulfilling life. I guess you never get over the grief, but there is hope.
There is hope. Absolutely. You never get over it, but you do find a way to move forward. And going forward, you do embrace the hope and you see it and it's there. It just takes time to get there.
And it doesn't hurt if you've got a group that can gather around you and support you, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's the bet. We carry people through some of their toughest days. And when they get through it, you know, they come back and they've grown so much and they feel better and you know, they're happier. It just takes time and love and support.
I would like to thank my guests for joining me today on The Human Condition with Lisa Gregory. And thank you, the listener, for joining us today. If you would like to know more about the show, please visit my website at thehumanconditionpodcast.com.